It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. You know what? It's a surprise. This program is live. It's the 22nd day of November, 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live, and, well, I'm not supposed to be here right now. But, as the great bard of Scotland, Robert Burns, once observed, "The best laid plans of mice and men gang aft a glee." I have no idea what he meant by that, but he did remark it once. And it might have something to do with the fact that things don't always work out. Like me being gone by now and headed over to the grandbaby's house. Sometimes turkeys don't thaw as quickly as you expect them to. Sometimes the smoking process doesn't come off with quite the military precision with which you had it planned. And so a certain bird sits on a certain smoker at a certain hour of the broadcast day. And consequently, this. So why waste it, right? What was I going to do? Watch broadcast television or something? And, you know, y'all have said something, a number of you have said things, well, all along the way, but recently, that stuck with me. Namely, the fact that you depend on this program. This program is more than just something that passes the time, more than just something that puts you to sleep on the rerun stream. That this program is something that is a real, live, honest-to-goodness, no-kidding part of your life. And you've talked about how, and appropriate to the time of year, how grateful you are to have it. And so I wanted to take this moment. It's about 3 minutes past the hour. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. To tell you how thankful we are for all of you. And by we, I don't mean me and that mouse in my pocket. I mean we, Agnes, and myself, and the rest of the family. We have friends that we never would have dreamed of having had this program not come into being. Most of the people who hear this program will probably hear it in delay on podcast, because I didn't announce that I was going to do a program this evening. It was sort of a game time decision. And I did. I reached the conclusion that since the schedule was not working out as planned, and since I wasn't going to be going anywhere until, like, sunrise tomorrow, that it would be nice to spend a little more time together. And after all, it's prayer meeting Wednesday. The little old blue-haired ladies have the night off because they're working their little old blue-haired heads off doing their own family's Thanksgiving dinners. But we're all set. We're all set, except for the, except for the parts of the process that didn't work out because time, temperature, mathematics, all things that that are perennial nemeses of mine. So here we are. So we'll have a little cussing and discussing, a little conversation. Maybe, who knows, there might even be a few people tuning in to that want to engage in conversation. One never knows. But more than anything else, I wanted to thank everyone who does spend what I describe as their precious finite time engaging with this long-running and ongoing conversation. Because it, you've said it's been life-changing on your end, and I can assure you it has been the same on ours. Far away, well, not that far away, about 92 miles away right now, Agnes is working on the... This might actually work out, except for the aforementioned logistical problems of mine. It being the most well-planned holiday feast meal that we've ever done. She's got little tiny, not tiny, but little slices of bread, French bread, all toasted, ready to go into the dressing. I insist upon the cheapest possible, because I come from working class hard scrabble folks, and that's the way it was always done when I was a kid. The cheapest possible canned biscuits for the dressing. I'm taking the iron skillets over, so doing the cornbread will be, well, there'll be two things that happen the minute I walk in the door. Get the turkey going, get the cornbread going. And, then the rest of the stuff comes together. The sweet potato croquettes, the mashed potatoes, the gravy will be a long process of giblet simmering. And I'm gonna need every bit of energy and fortitude I can get my hands on to get through the process. Mm-hmm. That is because the holidays are tough. I mean, it's not like a grueling brawl or anything, but it's a long day of cooking, and everything, of course, turns on the happiness of the little ones. And so, consequently, it consumes a lot of energy. And as a consequence, you need all the help you can get. That's why tomorrow morning, as I get ready to leave, I'm going to take a big handful of clamorous cranberries from Horn Labs. Yes, clamorous cranberries from the hardworking scientists at Horn Labs will perk up your holiday season. Now, I've got them for Thanksgiving. You can have them in time for Christmas. Yes, at just $109.17, we'll send you a 3-month supply of clamorous cranberries from Horn Labs. Clamorous cranberries when you just can't get enough cranberry goodness. And we recommend them throughout the year, clamorous cranberries. simply because, well, they're not just for the holiday season. But, you know, even though we recommend them, I've never been a big fan of cranberries. No, I haven't. And to this day, the only way I can get a full day's supply of cranberry goodness is with clamorous cranberries from Horn Labs. Because, you know, we wouldn't be a real online radio program or a real radio program at all if we didn't have a useless, bullshit, meaningless nutritional supplement to hustle every program. And so if you order your 3-month supply of clamorous cranberries from Horn Labs, we will send you a little packet of test strips that test absolutely nothing, and that, frankly, we stole from somebody's uncle's diabetes blood testing kit. And you can rub them around on your clamorous cranberry capsules, and you will be assured that clamorous cranberries from Horn Labs have absolutely no nutritional value whatsoever. So you can use them in complete confidence. Clamorous cranberries from Horn Labs are vegan, gluten-free, non-GMO, free-range, cruelty-free, and guaranteed to provide an uplifting experience. Clamorous cranberries from Horn Labs. Accept no substitutes, post no bills, use no hooks, this side up, FOB, COD, ATT. No thanks, I already did. Clamorous cranberries from Horn Labs. Yes. Oh, and thanks are due. Absolutely. Thanks are absolutely due this evening. Because, we have 3 subscribers on the 22nd day of the month. We have, for instance, Sylvia in California. Thanks, Sylvia. Sylvia, who every month sponsors the Cash the Check Challenge. And we've also got Felicia. Hi, Felicia in Nebraska. Thank you, Felicia. Thank you so very much. And we've got Michael. Thank you, Michael. Don't have an address for you. Thank you to Sylvia and Felicia and Michael, all of whom are our subscribers for the 22nd day of each month. And, well, we really appreciate our subscribers because they're a big, big, big part of how we stay on the air here at the Horn. I'm being told that we at least have the 8K low-quality stream at White Rose Society and on TuneIn, I presume, if anyone's listening. And we've also, of course, got the head-on.live stream. So that's good to know. Thank you. Thank you. Scott and Punky say, wow, your surprise is a pleasant surprise indeed. I was in the kitchen sitting on a 3-legged stool, fridge door open, stopwatch in hand, waiting for each and every arrival of the expiration dates times on all the dairy items. This, of course, gives a sense of what a drab, wretched life I live. So the surprise holiday eve broadcast is a delight. We're happy, terribly, terribly happy to provide the forum this evening, Scott. Wow, that's kind of cool. Jeremy in Vermont telling me that he has the 48K stream on TuneIn. Go figure. Cross your fingers. Maybe we shouldn't have mentioned it. Maybe it'll hold. How cool. This might even be, what's the word I'm looking for here? Yes, a clue. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Interesting facts about those clamorous cranberries. They go really well with your pernicious pumpkin pie. Well, yes, pernicious pumpkin. Another high-quality, meaningless, useless, absolutely, of no use whatsoever. I said useless. Product from the hardworking scientists at Horn Labs. Yep. So, you know, tomorrow's Thanksgiving, and every family has their Thanksgiving stories. I'm actually celebrating this evening. It's been a little bit brisk today. It's going to get down to, I think, 24 this evening. So I'm splurging and using an actual bottle of propane to heat the studio this evening. So it won't get quite so brutal in here quite so quickly. See, there's your holiday surprise too, Randy and PA. I tuned in just as a matter of habit, even although you told me that you weren't going to be here this evening. Loud and clear on iTunes on my Mac, Bob, so I guess the White Rose Society's up and running. Yay! Yeah, again, and again with a clue. You know, I'm beginning to wonder if we're just overloading the White Rose stream. That's worth pondering. Mm-hmm. But anyway, to a certain extent, it'll be an ordinary program this evening. Ordinary to the extent that, prayer meeting Wednesday can be ordinary. There was no midweek meal in the fellowship hall this evening. Like I said, the little old blue-haired ladies were gone. The deacons have the night off. Nonetheless, last I checked, they've become such fast friends with the sinners up in the parking lot that they're up there smoking with them anyway. They're not here in the cathedral. So it's just us, and we'll just, talk. And I wanted to share a couple of stories with you that I've had banging around for a couple of days, and oddly enough, don't involve skeevy evangelicals cruising the malls to see if they can put their A-plus moves on the little Santa's helper. No, this is a different kind of skeevy and cruel. Oh, yay, skeevy and cruel. At least we've got that going for us. Agnes. Before we get to that. Like I said, we've all got our holiday stories. And last year, I didn't even get to it, so I feel like I need to tell the official family holiday story that we pass around the table every year. And remember, Ferg, I thought about it earlier today. It was one of the things that got me thinking, maybe I'll wind up being on the air. Because the family is sort of scattered now. That's what families do when the little ones grow up. Ferg's planning to leave in search of meaningful work outside the state of West Virginia soon. So we're trying to enjoy this holiday together as much as possible. But we were headed over to Kroger's. And it was that same trip to Kroger's on a Thanksgiving Eve many years ago now. I'm guessing, 16 years ago? Yeah, because Doodle's the littlest, and she was little. Margie was old enough to be up and well-behaved. Our eldest wouldn't have known how to misbehave if the Tooth Fairy, the Easter Bunny, and Santa had all bribed her to do it. And Ferg was, Ferg was 5 or 6 years old. Dad was still around. He stayed back here to hold down the ranch. We moved the tribe around in those days in a Ford Windstar van. It blew up later, different story. Not a great vehicle, the Ford Windstar GL. But it got us where we were going for as long as we could, as long as it could stand our little tribe. Once upon a time, I made the horrible mistake of leaving a multicolored package of Sharpies that I had purchased for my work. I was looking around the house and, honey, did you see that pack of Sharpies? Oh, no, honey, I don't think you ever brought them in. And then we went out to the van one day, and it looked like the Cave of the Mysteries back in the third row, on the walls of the van back there on the third row back seat. I mean, it was amazing the degree to which the artwork that had been done upon the, in Sharpie, you know, indelible Sharpie, mind you, Sharpie that doesn't come off, Sharpie that, I mean, you can't cut it with gasoline, you can't cut it with alcohol, it will not come off, at least not all the way. By the time you get done scrubbing, it looks like it might be 10, 15, 20,000 years old. But it was amazing the degree to which the artwork on the walls looked very much like what you might expect to find, say, in a cave in Altamira, Spain. But that was not the evening of which I speak. No. The evening of which I speak was cold and wet and dreary. It was raining and sort of intimating that it wanted to be snow, but hadn't quite worked up enough verve for snow. So it was just going to be sloppy and wet. And it was about this time, because darkness had fallen. I forget what I was wearing for a coat back then, but I remember that Agnes was wearing the long black leather overcoat duster type thing that I had bought her the previous Christmas. It looked really pretty on her. It had applique and embroidery, and it was sort of patchwork. And yeah, it was all black, but it was, you know, had different textures. And so the usual advisories were given out as to the family in the van before we went in. We had only one commandment in our family. I mean, okay, Agnes went over the usuals, you know, don't talk to strangers, don't get in the car with strangers. Don't let strangers touch you in your no-no place. Don't stay alone in a room with a Baptist minister. That kind of thing. But when going out into, say, locations in which people are invitees for business purposes, there was one rule: stay with the group. Four words, not a whole bunch of letters, single monosyllabic words, stay with the group. And especially, and this was one of those where, I mean, this was back in the day when we did massive, massive Thanksgiving feasts. Thanksgiving breakfast and hors d'oeuvres and appetizers, and then the entree and all the trimmings and the sides. My God, the grocery list was like an original draft of Ulysses by Joyce, and actually probably made more sense. It certainly read like some free-form poetry. So there was a lot of stuff to get. It was probably going to be a two-buggy affair. And we knew, because cooking had to begin as soon as we got home, we knew that if we were chasing babies all over the store, we'd wind up forgetting something, miss something on the list, and then we'd have to swear all the way home in front of the children. And we'd never get the proper head start on what remained of a head start to Thanksgiving that we'd hoped to have. And so things went fairly well for as long as they, I guess, reasonably could have expected to go well. Our Kroger's, you walk in, there's the there's the buggy corral. We grabbed a couple of buggies. Margie and Laura walked. Ferg went in one buggy seat. Doodle went in the other. So I guess maybe they were three and four. So this would place at about 2,000. And they direct you into the fresh veggies and fruits. Well, there was a lot to do there. There was bananas and onions and celery and potatoes, mushrooms, greens, lemons. You're always going to need lemons for something. And so, you know, Agnes had the list, and I was grabbing some lemons, check, lemons, onions, check, onions, celery, check, celery, check, check, mushrooms, mic check. No, this was before mic check. And they've since rearranged, but the furthest aisle by the wall had soups and stuff, and so, you know, I think we needed like probably 10 of those boxes of chicken broth, because you don't want to run out when you're making vast quantities of gravy and you got to have the hot drip as much of the turkey drippings as you can for the dressing, but you're gonna have to make up for it too. So we made it through maybe four aisles, just down one, up the next, down one, and Ferg and Doodle were becoming restless. Margie and Laura would no sooner have deviated from the instructions than they would have flown to the moon. But the fussing and the kicking was beginning in the... when you're three and four, that's probably a little too big to be in the seat. I was sympathetic. I said, all right, that's fine. And we abandoned buggy one and really didn't have anything in it. So that was not a big, so I had them both by one in each hand, you know, holding hands. And again, stay with the group. I think Ferg has some Houdini in him, because he's a little guy. He was a little guy at the time. You don't want to hold his hand so hard you hurt him or anything. And no, I mean, it's not the point. And so he'd get loose. And for a while there, I thought he had real potential as maybe one of those really elusive tailbacks or something playing football. Just, gone. And his sister, at that point in time, most people thought they were twins. And his sister would gladly follow into whatever trouble Ferg was bent on going. This, of course, I'm not the disciplinarian, or I wasn't the disciplinarian. Agnes was the field marshal. I can't tell you the number of times I guess times have changed. Anymore, you go into a restaurant, somebody will be sitting over there, and there'll be a two, three, four, a toddler. And, the next thing you know, a huge wad of car keys will go zooming past your head because Precious over there has thought it would be fun to give it a fling. And, you just smile and, how precious. And then the baby starts screaming and proceeds to scream for the entire restaurant. Agnes was never the kind of mother who would tolerate something like that. Usually there was a one scream limit. One barbaric yawp. Agnes signals the server. The server walks over. We haven't even received our meals yet. And she'll just look at them and say, pack mine and the children's to go, please. We'll be in the van. We will let their father enjoy his meal in peace. I wasn't complaining. But Field Marshal von Agnes said on a number of occasions, these people came into this restaurant to enjoy their meal, not be screamed at by a baby. And so, into the van. Then the guilt kicks in. My meal arrives. The big bag of their to-go meals arrive. I take one bite. Well, I can't do this. I'll take a box, too. And we had some of the finest meals that Fayette County, West Virginia had to offer. Sitting in vans or opened when we got home. But the point of this is that Agnes was going to have well-behaved children, or they would simply not be seen in public. I'm not saying she was not mean. She was loving. I tell you what, I have never seen a human being better with little children than Agnes. I mean, you know that Bible verse about how not a sparrow falls to the ground, yada, yada, yada? That's Agnes. She was ready, no matter what. And there are lots of whats when you're raising little kids. She was ready. And she was, like I said, part field marshal, part tactician, and part MASH unit. That whole being a nurse thing comes in very handy. And just as she is now, back then, she was stunningly beautiful. Yeah, almost all American, we looked going up and down the aisles of that Kroger's. Yeah, well, I mean, except for me, you know, face made for radio and all that. And after about 2 attempted escapes by Ferg and Doodle, who were simply eager little kids who were magnetically drawn by the long straight aisles of the grocery store. Long straight aisles drive children to madness. I myself remember the first time I saw the hallway of my elementary school, little six-year-old that I was, and the first thing I think anybody said inside that school building, that little hall of knowledge, was, "No running in the halls." Why not? I mean, I felt the same urge that an iguana must feel at the sight of it. You just have to. There's no impediments. There's no rocks. There's nothing to trip over, fall on. It's not like they leave the floor scattered with broken glass just to teach the children not to run in the hall. You have to. It's like little kids, back in the days when we assigned a gender to things, so you would have said little boys, but I have since known little girls who have to stomp in mud puddles too. Little children are drawn to mud puddles, especially when wearing clean clothing. They can find one. It's like a Canada goose finding a pond to land in. They know where they are, and the cleaner they are, the more vigorously they will stomp. And the same with aisles. I mean, this is why they put lanes on tracks, in track and field events. It just begs you to follow it as quickly as you possibly can. And one of those early things we teach in organized educational environments is no, don't. That looks so fun. You want to run right down that hall. Don't do it. Why? Because it's against the rules. And so feeling like some sort of fleeing felon, every child eventually was presented with an opportunity to dash down that hall, and dash they did. I presume that still obtains. And the long, straight, orderly shelves of the Kroger and the open aisle spaces between them. And, you know, there weren't that many shoppers in Kroger's by that hour. Most of the sane people had gotten their holiday shopping out of the way. Most of the sane shoppers, having gone home and already gotten started on their meals, not us. And so there, but you know, the pharmacy was still open. There were still cashiers at the registers. People were still stocking stuff and keeping things in order. So the store was fully staffed. And it was the second, couldn't have been more than the third breakaway when Field Marshal Von Agnes, in her long black leather coat with her flaming hair afire, turned and looked at me and said, "Laura and Margaret are being good girls. They're staying with Daddy and staying with the group like they were told. I'm taking Pain and Panic, and we'll be in the van." And ever the indulgent father, I said, "Oh, honey, it's okay. I mean, the kids..." "We'll be in the van." "Yes, ma'am." And so it was that, in decided fashion, and that beautiful woman, walking with such determined stride up the aisle in the Kroger's, I'm challenged to begin to describe it. It was the determined stride of a woman on a sacred mission. A woman determined to not have her two youngest wreak havoc inside the Kroger's. And that view of her walking up and catching the two little ones, one in each hand, and saying, "Come with me." I was down at the far end of the aisle, back by the meat case. She caught up with them up close to the checkout registers. I was the last I saw of them, because I did as I was told, and went and I had the list, and I had the pen, and I had the buggy, and I had the two good children, and went on about shopping, and going on about shopping took a while. I mean, like I said, we were four or five aisles in. I hadn't gotten to the Lorna Dunes. I hadn't gotten to the mayonnaise. I hadn't gotten to the cornflakes. God knows I hadn't gotten to the hog jowl. I was nowhere near the dairy case. There were still eggs to be gotten. Bread. So I, too, was on a mission. And along the way, you know, teaching the kids about reading labels and comparing prices, and if the two prices are different, you compare the ingredients, and if the ingredients look the same, buy the less expensive one, that kind of thing. Yeah, you hope these lessons stick. Be a good little consumer. And so, with not another word, we shopped. And eventually, a buggy full to overflowing, we got to the checkout. And we checked through. And nothing was amiss. Nothing seemed out of the ordinary. And where I saw Agnes sitting and the kids safely strapped in their seats, and my beautiful bride was weeping, not a little bit. And I said, mind you, we'd only been married for, five, six, 7 years by then. I was still learning. Because when she replied, nothing. No inflection. Hardly any volume, barely audible. Not much more than a breath containing the word nothing. I didn't have enough good sense to let it go. And so, young husband, young concerned husband that I was, I said, no, really, honey, what's wrong? And then she turned to me. What happened out before I, because that was like Peter denying Christ for the third time at the cock's crow. What happened? And this is what had happened. Our two children were none too pleased at being taken out of the store because they wanted to run road races in every aisle. And so as they were walking out to the car, one started and the other followed. The first said, "Let go of my hand, you mean lady." And the other chimed in with, "You're not our real mommy." This was pure infantile evil. Not a word of truth in it. Nothing but a lashing out. But they said it at the top of their lungs. Big store, cavernous store, Kroger's, our Kroger's is. I never heard it. But they heard it in the pharmacy. And they heard it all up and down the checkout line. Oh, they were so cute, too. Just as blonde-headed as corn silk. And those merry, twinkling little blue eyes. Impeccably dressed. And suddenly, everyone at the front of house in Kroger's sprung into action. There was a bit of a shoplifting problem in the Kroger's, so it was not surprising for a member of the local constabulary and maybe another his partner to be parked in the cruiser out in the parking lot. They were called. By the time they were called, Agnes was already in the minivan with the kids safely buckled in. And the two cops walked up. I'm sure if Agnes was listening, I'm getting some part of this wrong, but if Agnes was, anyway, the two cops walked in. "Ma'am, can we see your ID?" We have a report these may not be your children. And look, that kind of crazy shit goes on in West Virginia. You know, where women will steal other women's children and things where they'll, you know, try to sell them for a half an ounce of meth down at the Rippy Mart and that kind of thing. So no fault on the police force here. And I don't know that Agnes was ready for this, but she just looked at, she just stuck her wrists out the window and said, "No, go ahead and take me. Take me now. No, no, please. I'm begging. Three hots and a cot. I'm down." With her bare wrists sticking out the minivan window, waiting for the cuffs. The cop says, "Ma'am, are these your children?" And again, words spoken almost without breathing. It's like some sort of Jedi mind trick. "Yes, they're mine. They're so mine. I carried them. I bore them. I bathe them. I feed them. I dress them. They're mine." And the cops, it was like something out of a sitcom. One was a shorter, more portly gentleman. He'd seen a few things in his time. And the other was an eager young space cadet, who suddenly wanted to get all rules and regulations on the field marshal. "Well, ma'am, we had a report that they claimed they're not..." At which point, the older, wiser, more portly cop turned to his young partner and said, "They're her kids. I know they're her..." "Well, how do you know? You haven't said..." "They're her kids." A kidnapper would never stick her hands out the window and say, "Take me," and describe bathing and cleaning and feeding and raising children and say, "Take me three hots and a cot, I'm ready to go." No kidnapper would do that. Those are her children. Our work here is done. We've made sure everything's okay. Let's go. And that's the story that was relayed to me in a fairly short period of time after I was sitting in the driver's seat of the van putting my seatbelt on and as we drove home. You know, it's about 15-16 miles. As we drove home, just every now and then, she'd look up and go, "Never again. Never again. You want to take them somewhere? You take them somewhere. I will not be a part of it. Never again." Now, granted, I haven't accompanied this with a little repeating guitar figure. And there are no 8x10 color glossy photos with circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one. And it doesn't have the sweet, heartwarming drama and tenderness of, say, The Homecoming up on Walton's Mountain. But I suspect we all have something similar. Yeah, only this little family would have something as bizarre as that, but we've all got something similar. And that's ours. Now, obviously, Agnes did go out in the company of her children again and again and again. But, and the Thanksgiving was perfectly lovely. That was not the year that I almost set the house on fire. or the other year that I almost set the house on fire, or the other year that I almost set the house on fire. That was just the year of the Thanksgiving dinner shopping ordeal, and the hasty retreat beaten from Kroger's. But they didn't ban us like they banned Roy Moore from the mall. Nothing skeevy had taken place. And I like to hope that the little ones learned something. There wasn't much for the two eldest to learn. They were entirely too busy being good. Ah, but the two younger ones. Well, they began to understand that they would never, ever, ever outfox, outwit, outsmart their mama. And that remains a fact unto this day. One of them's 20. The other one's 21. Will be 22 the day after Christmas. That's another story. His arrival. But they're a special lot, and we love them dearly. And we will all be together, with the exception of one, come tomorrow, because she's way, 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 way off. And just can't be reached. I mean, can't be reached. I mean, we reach her, but you get the idea. People, I may be in trouble. It's 8 minutes before the hour, and I'm here, and the boss is Field Marshal Von Agnes is elsewhere. But even where she is, Skype is a thing. Yes, dear? Did I get any of it wrong?
Can you hear me?
I hear you.
I'm trying to get the speaker on. Oh.
Okay, we do not need video. Oh, she hung up. Skype over mobile devices. Give me a second here. If I've missed any portion of this, I don't want to get it wrong. Sorry for the dead air. We'll just wait a minute. I'm not moving on from this. She'll be back in a sec. Randy in PA. She hung up. Bad sign? No, bad connection. Just a sec. You haven't lost the stream. We're just waiting with bated breath for Agnes. Internet over there is sketchy indeed. I won't have any idea of what's going on in the world all day tomorrow. And just in case, no, there were no beatings or anything like that. Facing the wrath of a disappointed Agnes was worse than any beating. Absolutely. Well, I don't really know what's going to... Okay. We'll see how this... see how this all plays out. I assure you, this was not planned. But, of course, the other... the other thing that goes with this time of year, well, you've probably got a pretty good idea. Yeah, this.
And I think I hear something now. The crowd is moving out into the parking area. And, oh yes, I can see it now. It's a helicopter. And it's coming this way.
All right, we'll get back to Les Nessman in just a moment. Thank you for that on-the-spot report, Les. All right, do we have Agnes?
I think we do.
Okay, yay. Hi, baby.
Hello. I just wanted to call and wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving.
I'm so glad you did. Your timing was perfect. I suspect you must have been listening or something because I was just wrapping up the great Thanksgiving Kroger horror story.
The Thanksgiving from hell. Yeah.
Well, just now the
Thanksgiving. I remember it well.
The Thanksgiving wasn't. I mean, it was just the shopping part.
Only the part where our children tried to get me arrested, right?
Yeah, well, yes. With your, with your wrists outside the window. No, take me, really, please. Three hots
yeah,
and a cot.
Yeah, only look.
I'm ready to go.
Only looking like the hillbilly from The Matrix, right? That was really enchanting.
Well, I described that lovely black leather coat in no such terms.
That's all me. It was interesting, and I didn't wear it again after that.
Did you not?
No. Are you kidding? In our area? No. Especially with two children. That looked creepy.
So now, through the lens of hindsight, you've decided
Yes, because it didn't turn out well. Now, did it?
Well, I mean, I didn't have to bail you out or anything.
Oh, honey, you wouldn't have bailed me out. I wouldn't have allowed you. I would have stayed there.
I told you.
Hindsight being 20. No, yeah. Hindsight being 2020, I should have went.
So I've told him that, you know, my logistical failures over here with the turkey that refused to thaw. But you're working up the biscuits and you're working up you've got the bread toasted for the dressing and.
Yes, I do, in a big pan of peanut butter fudge.
Oh well, very nice. I'll go and crush up a few of those leftover metformins and just snort them off the desk before I come over.
No, you can have pumpkin pie. You can't have.
No, I'm having banana pudding. I am having banana pudding.
Only a serving. I watch you like a hawk. Well,
we'll find something for you to do.
That doesn't work really well. I have.
Well, no, I know.
Head.
I know better. I know better. I know what's going to happen to the banana pudding. I'll be.
Babies will be right on it.
Well, depends on which babies. You mean baby Laura and baby Margaret and baby Ferg?
Well, you know, there are smaller babies that come first. The elder babies can suffer quietly. I'm just saying.
Well, I've got a big pan for it, so. And I got
good.
And I got two. It'll take it. I got two boxes of the flan mix, so.
Oh,
and
Lord.
Two big bunches of bananas and.
Well, I'd say that we're going to be in good shape. So I'm starting here, and you're starting there, and we'll meet in the middle, and we'll make it a good Thanksgiving.
Well, I'm planning on getting up at Sparrow's Fart and heading your way.
Well, I can't wait to see you. I miss you terribly.
Oh, I miss you horribly. But let's not, you know.
Well, I mean, we're with family right now.
Oh, that's true.
I know, but we're with family right now, so it's okay. And, you know, I just wanted to call in and tell you I miss you all, and to have a happy Thanksgiving wherever you are, and to give Gene and Ann our love, and Ben and Katie, and Mike and Kathy. I know, don't start the Walton list, you know, good night, John Boy, but...
Right.
I hope everyone knows that we're sending love and thoughts, Asa and Jody.
Right.
But I love you all. Our internet has been going in and out because I really am in God's country, and I don't want to take a chance to lose the call or hog your time.
Well, you please. My time is your time, dear.
Well, of course, but I'm thoughtful to the other family members that want to call in.
So, yeah, we'll do that here in a minute. But all right, then, dearest, I'll see you on the morrow. And
all right,
and we'll throw it over to Les Nessman, shall we?
All right, I love you guys.
Love you, baby. Say, take it away, Les.
Love you. Bye. Take it away, Les.
Here's something now. The crowd is moving out into the parking area. Oh, yes, I can see it now. It's a helicopter, and it's coming this way.
A helicopter?
It's flying something behind it. I can't quite make it out. It's a large banner, and it says, Happy Thanksgiving. Gentlemen, what a sight. The copter seems to be circling the parking area now. I guess it's looking for a place to land. No, something just came out of the back of the helicopter. It's a dark object. Perhaps a skydiver plummeting to the earth from only 2,000 feet into the air. Second, the third. There's no parachutes yet.
Happy skydivers. I can't tell just yet what they are, but...
Oh, my God, they're talking! Crashing to the earth right in front of my eyes. I just went through the windshield of a parked car. It is terrible. The cars running around pushing each other. Oh, my goodness. Oh, the humanity. Oh, people are running about. The turkeys are hitting the ground like sacks of wet cement. I don't know how much longer the crowd is running for their lives. I think I'm going to step inside. I can't stay out here and watch this anymore. No, I can't go in there.
Tragedy has never been anything like this. I don't know how much longer. situation here, Johnny. The crowd...
Les, are you there? Les isn't there. Thanks for that on-the-spot report, Les. Just tuned in, the Pinedale Shopping Mall has just been bombed with live activity. Film at 11.
It should have worked.
Can I help you?
No, I'm fine. Sir?
It was the most unusual promotion idea I ever heard of. Never been anything else like it.
No, I don't suppose there has.
I thought it would work. I planned this thing right down to the last detail. It was perfect. Where'd you get those birds?
Are you okay?
I don't know. A man and his two children tried to kill me. After the turkeys hit the pavement, the crowd kind of scattered, but some of them tried to attack me. I had to jam myself into a phone booth. Then Mr. Carlson had the helicopter land in the middle of the parking lot. I guess he thought he could save the day by turning the rest of the turkeys loose. It's pretty strange after that.
Strange.
Yeah, right.
No, Les, come on now, tell us the rest.
I really don't know how to describe it. It was like the turkeys mounted a counterattack. It was almost as if they were organized.
As God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly.
As God is my witness, yes. And so, happy Thanksgiving, everybody. We'll take a little break and sort of reset. And see how things play out. If you've got something on your mind, you're welcome to jump in, 304-574-8178. I got news stories I kind of wanted to get to for... prayer meeting Wednesday. It's rather, I guess, what with it being the night before Thanksgiving, somehow it's a bumper crop. The holidays just bring out the weird in them. I mean, think about it. 32-year-old Roy Moore sort of greasing around the Gadsden Mall and sidling up to Santa's workshop and saying, "Hey, little darling, you want a date?" Him 32 years old and her, 15, 16. Yeah. But much more than that. A couple of them from round hereabouts. From here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by God, Virginia Stan. So yeah, let's take a break and see where the rest of the program takes us. This is a night before Thanksgiving live special presentation of the Horn, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
I remember the smell of the creosote plant when we'd have to eat on Easter with my crazy old uncle and aunt. They lived in a big house, antebellum style, and the winds would blow across the old bio when I was a tranquil little child. Life was just a tire swing, jambalaya was the only song I could sing. Blackberry picking, eating fried chicken, and I never knew a thing about pain. Life was just a tire swings. In a few summers, my folks packed me off and came. Yeah, me and my cousin Baxter and our pup tin with a lamp. In a few days, Baxter went home and he left me by myself. But I knew that I'd stay, it was better that way, and I could get along without any help. Life was just a tire swing. Jambalaya was the only song I could sing. Chasing after sparrows, rubber tipped arrows, knowing I could never hurt a thing. Life was just a tire swing. I've never been west to New Orleans or east to Pensacola. My only contact with the outside world was an RCA Victrola. And it was good singing, and then I'd dream about expensive cars. And who would have figured 20 years later I'd be rubbing shoulders with the stars. I fell asleep at the wheel, but was quickly waking up by a Marbell telephone pole. And a bunch of Grandwood faces screaming, is he still alive? Through the window I could see it hanging from a tree, and I knew that I had survived in life. Still a tire swing. Jambalaya is the best song I can sing. Black parrot picking, eating fried chicken, but I finally learned a lot about pain.
Yeah, so it's Easter dinner and not Thanksgiving dinner, but the intent still comes through. It is 13 minutes past the hour, 13 minutes past 7 p.m. here in the Eastern Standard Time Zone. I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is the unanticipated surprise free gift night before Thanksgiving live broadcast. Because I'm too disorganized to make everything fall into place. I mean, just, I am who I am. At any rate, we're gonna shift gears now. I've got a story here. Agnes actually provided it to me. Being as how this is prayer meeting Wednesday, I'll just stand in the pulpit here at the Cathedral of Common Sense and share this stuff with you. We don't need deacons passing plates on the night before Thanksgiving. I'd say they're about two-thirds of the way through a pack of Marlboros each up in the parking lot with the sinners right now, as it is. Now, understand at the outset that this news story comes to us from a weirdo right-wing religious site called lifenews.com. Lifenews.com. I dare say that if you go to lifenews.com, you won't find any stories about life. Instead, you'll find lots of stories about the precious little fetuses. Yeah. You won't find stories about the United States' collaboration and collusion in an ongoing genocide in, say, Yemen. You won't find anything about that. You'll find stories about fetuses. You won't find any stories about starvation anywhere on the planet. You'll find stories about fetuses. You won't find stories about things that affect the ability to have life. You know, toxic pipelines and massive oil spills and destroyed streams and poisoned air. You won't find any of that. You'll find stories about blastocysts. You won't find any stories about tens of thousands of Haitian refugees who are going to be thrown out of the country thanks to Donald J. Trump. No, you'll find stories about zygotes. And this particular story, in other words, it's a wholly hypocritical undertaking. Some person named Stephen Ertelt posted a story there. Now, I tell you what, though, I got to give it to these fetus fondlers and fetus fetishists. They certainly do know how to grab an eyeball and create clickbait. How's this for a headline? And yes, it's out of West Virginia. Father, who raped his 11-year-old daughter, took her for abortion, avoids prison. I don't care who you are, you're going to read that. Agnes saw it, read it, and immediately sent it to me because she knew what it would, she read it. Father, who raped his 11-year-old daughter, took her for abortion, avoids prison. No, this is not another story about Roy Moore. Like I said, it comes from West Virginia. This is one of those art of word-knowing moments. Listen to how it's written. A father of an 11-year-old girl in West Virginia who was arrested and ultimately indicted after arranging for an abortion following a case of pregnancy following incest will avoid prison. West Virginia State Police say they consented to the abortion, and the abortion clinic in question didn't report the abortion to authorities. Is it just me, or does it sound like the folks over at Life News are severely aggrieved that an 11-year-old little girl was not forced to carry to term the baby that was created as a result of her rape by her daddy? Well, look, there's an ad. Help to end abortion. There's another ad. America, legalized prostitution may soon become the law of the land. It's true. Learn more. So we've got that lead paragraph there, and by the time you're done, he wasn't arrested. Michael and Amanda Adkins were arrested on charges of child neglect causing the risk of injury. While some licensed medical professionals were involved in getting information to authorities, WSAZ-TV indicates the abortion clinic in Charleston that did an abortion did not report the clear case of statutory rape. I'm sure our friend Beth in Dallas is not listening tonight, but she's probably, if she catches the podcast, she'll be throwing things at walls. So we get that mom and dad were arrested as, you know, the law would need to have done. The only thing the folks at Life News are interested in is pointing out that the clinic that performed the necessary, badly needed, desperately right thing to do abortion didn't report a clear case of statutory rape. Gee, wonder why Life News isn't interested in saying that they didn't report the clear case of incest. Well, the indictment charged Michael Joe Adkins with incest, first-degree sexual assault, and sexual abuse by a parent for alleged intercourse with his daughter, which impregnated the girl as the sexual activity continued after she became 12. I don't know what the after she became 12 part has to do with the whether or not she became pregnant, but I wasn't the editor on this thing. He and the girl's stepmother, Amanda Ray Adkins, also faced counts of child neglect, creating risk of injury and conspiracy as part of an abortion and subsequent procedure aimed at covering up the alleged incest. You see what they're doing here? They're trying to make it sound as though the abortion itself was a crime, when in fact it was the single, only humane thing that happened to the poor child in the entire process. The sexual assaults of the girl took place between October 2010 and February 2011, and then took the girl for an abortion after the incest impregnated her on March 1st. The incest impregnated her? I think her daddy did. Then they subsequently got her a DNC on March 16th. But a news report today indicates Adkins has merely been placed on probation. I can only imagine what it must be like to live with the mind of one of these fetus fetishists. They're more outraged by the abortion than they are by the incest rape. WSAZ indicates the abortion clinic in Charleston that did an abortion did not report the clear case of statutory rape. We're back to statutory rape. The Gadsden Mall didn't report the clear case of... Oh, never mind. In this case, because the abortion was not reported by the abortion clinic, and the parents did not tell anyone it was done, state police say the parents were able to go back to the doctor that was working with investigators and tell him the girl was having symptoms of a miscarriage. He then performed a D&C procedure, unknowingly putting the girl in danger. No! The part that put the little girl in danger was having to carry a baby to term at 11 and 12 years old. Too bad this guy has a felony rap now. He could move to Alabama and vote for Roy Moore. They'd probably be fast friends. West Virginia State Police Corporal Marlene Moore said, "That point was withheld, which makes it pertinent to her health and safety. That's where the neglect creating risk of injury comes in. The parents neglected to take care of her needs, her basic needs, and put her in extreme danger by letting her go through an unnecessary procedure, be put under anesthesia when they knew that had been performed before." So these fetus fetish freaks would rather have seen this little child, who is in no wise ready to give birth, have her insides ripped all to pieces, than for her to have... Right. The pro-life movement has repeatedly documented how abortion facilities fail to report cases of statutory rape and predators using abortions to cover up their crimes. Where's the paragraph about how the pro-life movement wants the children who are the victims of incest and rape to carry their daddy rapist's baby to term? Because that's the upshot. So what's going to happen to daddy? Daddy was put on probation. He entered what's called a Kennedy plea, which means that he pled guilty without admitting having done anything. The first circuit judge who got the case was so disgusted by it that instead of rejecting the plea outright and forcing the state to trial, he recused himself from the case, and another judge was assigned the case. Now, why on earth would a judge approve a plea that gave a guy probation who had just committed rape and incest? Not that the rape and the incest much bother the folks over there at Life News. Because of the victim. Have you seen what full-grown women who have talked about what was done to them when they were children have been put through by the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Christians? Have you seen that? Have you heard that? Just today when I was scanning Twitter, I saw some Trumpansy maggots-oriented right-wing blatherer who was eager to share news and information that he had received that said that at the time Roy Moore was picking up Miss Korfman and hitting on her outside the family law court there in Gadsden, that in fact the custody matter that they were there on was for her mama to give custody of the child to her daddy because she was so out of control. A right-winger really proudly shared that information as a way of exonerating Roy Moore. And he called Miss Korfman, at the time a little girl. She was already a head case. That's the thing. Had any complaint, had any formal legal complaint been lodged against Roy Moore at the time, defense lawyers would have chewed that little girl into a thousand tiny pieces, just like a defense lawyer would have in the course of providing a zealous representation to his or her client there, you know, Uncle Daddy, had to destroy a little 11-year-old girl. So the prosecutor and the defense lawyer tried to reach an understanding whereby a little girl who had already been made a victim was not made a further victim by virtue of the adversarial process that takes place in American courts of justice. Now, the second judge, you know what he did? He put Mr. Adkins on 50 years probation. In other words, he's going to be on probation the rest of his life. That means the rules of probation apply, and the rules of probation can be pretty thorough. And judges can put it just about anything in special rules into a probationary order that they want to. So, in sentencing, you might find this interesting. Circuit Judge Robertson or Paul T. Farrell. Circuit Judge Paul T. Farrell said, "I'm going to be blunt. I hope you screw up during those 50 years so I can send you to prison. If you violate any of the terms and conditions in the next 50 years, then the court can send you to prison. And I'm hoping that's the case, because you should go to prison for what you did. That was actually pretty savvy on his part. Because there won't be any need to torment she's a close to an adult now, if she's not already. But there won't be any need to torment her. The only question to be proven at a probation revocation will be whether or not he violated one of the set terms and conditions of the probation. And the little girl won't have to be anywhere near the court. And upon a finding of the probation violation, the judge can send him straight to prison on every count for everything he did. But the folks over at Life News aren't happy, because they would like for a baby to have been born into that household that Uncle Daddy could then molest too. Like I said, I'd hate to have to live inside the brain of one of these fetus fetishists. They're sick, they're dangerous, and they're freaks. And how many examples of that do we need? Somebody just tried to reach the program, but it came in on the wrong account. If you want to reach the program, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn. That's how you reach the program. This is a special Thanksgiving Eve edition of the Horn. And Thanksgiving Eve always falls on a Wednesday, so that means it's a prayer meeting Wednesday edition of the Horn. Mm-hmm. Let's stay right here in West Virginia, shall we? The Eastern Panhandle of West Virginia is that part of West Virginia that looks like if you take your right hand and you make an obscene gesture that means you, and you stick out your thumb and you look at the palm of your right hand. Well, West Virginia is the only state in the Union whose outline forms can make an obscene gesture. You know, Michiganders will say, you know, they'll hold up the palm of their hand and they'll say, well, you know, the thumb and the thumb, you know, of the mitten. No, West Virginia is an obscene gesture. Sort of saying back to America what America has said to us since June the 20th, 1863. But Berkeley County is in the thumb. And it's been settled for a really long time. And it's also in fairly close proximity to Washington, D.C. I mean, there are people who commute from the Eastern Panhandle to work in D.C. It's not that bad a ride. It's about a 2-hour train ride. Anyway, among other things that they have in Berkeley County, West Virginia, why, by golly, they've got themselves a Church of Latter-day Saints, otherwise known as the Mormons. And, well, those Berkeley County Mormons are getting sued right out of their magic underwear. It was back in 2013 when a guy by the name of, you know, a good Book of Mormon believing, upstanding, Kolob dreaming, whatever, Mormon by the name of Michael Jensen, back in 2013, he got 35 to 75 years in prison after he was convicted for sexually assaulting a number of little children, including one who was, well, 4 years old. And now the lawsuit, the civil suit, has been filed. 12 John and Jane Doe plaintiffs, because good God-fearing, upstanding Book of Mormon believing Michael Jensen was equal opportunity. 12 plaintiffs, John and Jane Doe's, males and females, have filed suit against the LDS Church and the officials of the church, including the parent of Michael Jensen. Because it turns out, and this is what makes it a special prayer meeting Wednesday kind of story, it turns out that the Mormons there in Berkeley County continued to let Michael Jensen supervise and take care of and look after little children even after they already knew that he was a child molester. The Jensen family arrived in Martinsburg in 2006, at which point both of Michael Jensen's parents accepted high-level leadership roles inside the Hedgesville Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Mama then recommended her boy as a babysitter for families that attended the church as far back as 2007. Language from the complaint reads as follows. The church was repeatedly put on notice and or had knowledge of Michael Jensen's predatory acts. In 2007, before the abuses of the minor children suing herein, the Stake High Council held a meeting where Michael Jensen's sexual abuses of his younger sibling and another minor child were discussed. Also in 2007, the mother of a victim, party in this case, who was 4 years old when abused, told Michael Jensen's mother, the church's local relief society president, and Michael Jensen's father, a Stake High Council member, that she was concerned that Michael had done something to harm their daughter while he babysat her. Meanwhile, even after the Stake High Council was made aware of the information, they still did not contact any law enforcement authorities, any child welfare authorities, and the Stake High Council continued to allow Michael Jensen to be around children whom he then went on to molest. Just think, if all of those families had been atheists, their children would never have been molested. Interesting thought experiment, isn't it? And so now they're suing their own church because of the manifest harm that was done to their precious children by the church that represents their supreme being. How's about that? Wow. My heart goes out to them. Good luck to them. How about you give up religion now? Your God didn't protect your children from being molested. What kind of God does that? Well, God moves in mysterious ways. Really? By letting children be molested by... Oh, okay. Then there's California. Mm-hmm. Where a guilty plea was entered last week by Jason Morris Gorski, who was a teacher at the Southwestern Longview Private School in Long Beach, California, and in addition to being a teacher, was an elder in the Jehovah's Witness Kingdom Hall congregation in Cypress, California, which was also attended by a little boy. Well, not that little. He was young, but just old enough. He was a teenager. Between June 2007, these things take time to work out. Between June 2007 and June 2008, Jason Morris Gorky perpetrated at 2 counts of lewd acts with a minor. Mm-hmm. Well, what happened? Well, the Jehovah's Witness is there. I mean, it's not like he gave the kid a blood transfusion that would keep him from being among the elect or anything. Because, you know, the Jehovah's Witnesses, they don't believe in blood transfusions. They'd rather let a little kid die on the operating table. They let him continue on as a member there of the Kingdom Hall because, after all, he's one of the elect. But he did have to step down as elder. A year later, though, he moved on to a little place called Fort Mill, South Carolina. And that's when he hooked up with the Jehovah's Witness congregation in Charlotte, North Carolina. His initial victim was 13 years old. And Gorski wasn't arrested until June of 2016, when the victim finally reported the abuse to the police, and, well, then he pled guilty. At the time of his arrest, police said, over the years, many children have been exposed to Gorski, specifically during his time as a school teacher and church leader. It is believed that additional victims may exist who have not yet reported their abuse to authorities. See, here's the problem. They may very well have reported the abuse to the Jehovah's Witness Kingdom Hall, but, well, that's between the Kingdom Hall and God, and you know how it is. They don't want to involve the authorities. That can lead to so much unpleasantness. Oh, by the way, expressions of profound contrition. And that's true. That's true. Devin noting, God only moves if he's got a starship. There's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. Thank you. Thank you, Devin. You remember Anthony Weiner? He was driven from Congress at the insistence of Nancy Pelosi after it turned out he had a predilection for sending tweets of his junk in his tighty-whities. He had to go. Good idea. Well, there's a little community in Texas called Ennis. Stop it, you people. Just stop that. Ennis. And their member of the House of Representatives is Joe Barton. Old Joe Barton is, in fact, the longest-serving member of Congress from the entire Texas delegation. He's been there quite a while. Well, earlier this week, for some reason or another, a photograph began making the rounds on social media of good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, representing Joe Barton. It was not, shall we say, his campaigning portrait. No, it was a big old naked picture of Joe Barton naked. This might be a good time at 7:45 in the Eastern Standard Time Zone to remind folks who are not of of the Southern persuasion that there are two words in the vocabulary. Naked and naked. Naked, N-A-K-E-D, is the state of being without clothing. Naked, N-E-K-K-I-D, is the state of being without clothing and up to something. Well, once Joe Barton woke up one morning and realized that his little photo was making the rounds. He's up for re-election, by the way, in 2018. He said, while separated from my second wife prior to the divorce, I had sexual relationships with other mature adult women. Each was consensual. Those relationships have ended. I'm sorry I did not use better judgment during those days. I'm sorry I let my constituents down. I'm not sick enough to wonder what was so what was such a letdown about the. Never mind, stop that. You'll notice nowhere in that statement appears the words, "I will never run for Congress again." The Texas Tribune called Joe Barton Tuesday to ask him if he was going to resign, and he said, "You're as aware of what was posted as I am. I'm talking to a number of people, all of whom I have faith in, and I'm deciding how to respond, quite frankly." Joe Barton is a guy who sits at the head of the Energy and Commerce Committee in the House, by the way. This is a guy who believes that nobody in this country has a right to breathe clean air or drink clean water. And that there has never been an energy company from whom he would not happily receive money. That Joe Barton. Haven't seen a bunch of news stories about Joe Barton, have you? Sure did see a whole bunch of stories about Anthony Weiner back in the day, though, didn't you? Haven't seen any stories about how House Speaker Paul Ryan is trying to figure out what to do, whatever shall we do about Joe Barton. No, instead, the only stories I can find are the fact that, revenge porn is illegal in Texas. So it could be that Naked Joe is not, he ain't done nothing wrong. He is a victim of crime. He is a victim of revenge porn. If we can just figure out who had the porn and whether it was revenge or not. He's a victim, damn it. Victims don't have to resign from the congregation. Right? Oh, well. And besides, he was in between marriages. Never mind the fact that he ain't supposed to be getting divorced anyhow. He's in between marriages. That's just how that is. He's been in the House of Representatives since 1985 when he entered as a fresh-faced young conservative. Eager to help advance the Reagan agenda. Oh, by the way, if the photo was, if it, at the time he sent the photo, if he was in Washington, D.C., he may be the one who broke the law. Just, you know, saying. James says, one subject campaign, plaster that photo everywhere. No. I mean, I don't know, maybe you pixelate the, or No. But, you know, remember, also, Joe Barton is a family values Republican. I'm sure if you dig deep into Joe Barton's voting record, you'll find he is a firm believer that marriage is a sacred ordinance between one man and one woman. Until it ain't, at which point one man has the right to send naked pictures of himself to whomever he might please, or try to please, or hope to please, or want to please. Right. Hey, by the way, this being prayer meeting Wednesday and all, 9 minutes before the hour. Remember when Clarity and I, a while back, were talking about the fire there in Oregon that was the Eagle Creek fire that was just burning up significant chunks of the state? Well, we know who did it. It took the authorities in Oregon 7 weeks to figure it out. Because, well, frankly, there was a lot of time spent on just putting the damn fire out because it burnt 48,000 acres and the cost is running upwards of $20 million. But they did. In an article in the Oregonian, turns out a juvenile did it. A juvenile who was throwing smoke bombs into the canyon. And when it all started burning, he just laughed and laughed. He's a happy young man. He's a snowboarder. Goes to church all the time. He's Pentecostal. Yep. This is trauma for him, the boy's mother said in Russian. She did, however, acknowledge it was his mistake. Mm-hmm. Back in October, somebody on Twitter said, the boy who started the Eagle Creek fire is a teen. Teens do this kind of thing all the time. It was a terrible human mistake. Others were not quite so forgiving. To the teen who allegedly started the Eagle Creek fire, I hope you land in jail and bankrupt your family over your idiocy. Meanwhile, speaking to Oregon Live, District Attorney John Sewell said, I know, without a doubt, that this boy's parents have suffered psychological injury due to their son's actions. This includes an inordinate amount of stress, anxiety, and fear concerning the well-being of not just the accused, but also the other children in the family home. It turns out they're immigrants. They fled Ukraine in 2000. And they quickly found a home, and then they found a church home, a Pentecostal church in Vancouver, whose services are offered almost entirely in Russian. We are told by the Oregonian, people in the church are suffering, praying that it doesn't bring some negative consequences for all of us Russian speakers. We're travelers and visitors. We're not in our country. Of course, we're a little scared. Yeah, maybe focus a little bit more in your Pentecostal church in teaching your kids not to fucking burn down 48,000 acres of forest! And maybe a little less on speaking in tongues and anointing each other with oil and passing snakes around, why don't you? This is the same bunch that isn't particularly fond of taking their children to the doctor when they're sick. And if you're a woman in that Pentecostal faith, you're not allowed to ever wear pants, because the almighty creator of the universe is incensed by women who wear pants. He's also apparently incensed by women who cut their hair. You know, between all the fashion choices that this deity insists on people making, most of which, not all, but most of which apply to women, it's a wonder he had any time at all to get around to the business of actually taking care of his creation. Which apparently, seeing as how he let one of his followers burn down 48,000 acres, he's not very good at doing. So we've got that. This isn't particularly religion oriented, but it still seems to fit. I'm just trying to hit stories that don't necessarily involve the stuff that is involving sucking all the oxygen out of the room in the for-profit media. That's all I'm doing. New York Newsday, where a school teacher at Uniondale High School, a 58-year-old man by the name of Stephen Solomon, he teaches health, has been suspended. Not fired, mind you, just suspended, because he confessed that he flunked two kids 10 years ago because they wouldn't stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. No shit. Well, you know, it happened 10 years ago. The kids may have been head cases. Maybe their parents were trying to give up custody of them. And I would have done that if they wouldn't stand for the pledge, little un-American bastards. Talking to Newsday, Stephen Solomon said, "It was a different atmosphere 10 years ago than it is today. These kids failed themselves. They had a 63 or 62, less than passing. They didn't stand for the pledge. That was part of the component. And it's the teacher's discretion at that point whether they want to pass them or not. I didn't make them stand. They didn't stand. They sat. And I encouraged them to stand. And I said how you're standing is just a respect for the country, the flag, and for the military people that risked their lives to fight and protect your freedom. If a kid doesn't stand for the pledge, who said he doesn't care if these military people live or die, who doesn't respect his peers and is a discipline problem in the classroom? Why should I reward this kid?" On Facebook, Stephen Solomon referred to the students as suckers. Superintendent William Lloyd of the school district then issued the following statement. "The school district is aware of a teacher posting on social media about a situation involving grades and standing for the Pledge of Allegiance that occurred more than a decade ago. The district has taken the proactive measure of assigning this faculty member to out-of-classroom duties until further investigation into the matter can be completed." I suspect it will take approximately as long to complete the investigation as it will take for Stephen Solomon to reach retirement age and be able to walk away with his little pension. Mm-hmm. Like I said, lots of stories out there. Not getting covered. So, if you want to engage in conversation, you're more than welcome to. You know how to do that. 304-574-8178. Or, from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn. And, If you want to get involved with the conversation, I look forward to it. Let's take a little break, and then we'll see what shakes out. I'm Bob Kincaid. It's a long-distance dedication going out from Representative Joe Barton to whoever it was that he sent the dirty picture. Yes, yes. Hey, this doesn't happen just every evening, especially because he's over across the pond and everything. It's News Ninja Gene. Hey, Gene.
Hey, Bob, can you hear me?
I hear you great. You sound wonderful.
Thanks. I got a little bit of a story for you.
Okay.
It's a little holiday story.
Oh, yay.
A couple weeks ago, we had a friend come by with holiday gifts, and he got us, and if he's listening, we appreciate it, Patty, but we kind of don't. Anyway, he brought us a couple of calendars. He got my wife this nice calendar for next year, and then he also got me a calendar of the stupid things by Dole 45. Well,
that's just a little too kind, isn't it?
Yeah, we've gotten to the point where we don't really, unless it's maybe toilet paper with Dole's face on it, we really don't want anything in the house with to do with Dole, honest. So my sweetly devious wife went through and she worked for this group at the college that she worked at, and she organized a white elephant game, a white elephant gift game, just to get rid of that calendar.
She is devious. That's delightful. And of course, people need to understand, you're in the UK. So,
they don't know what a white elephant.
Well, no, it's just.
They don't know what a white elephant game is.
Do they not?
No. They know what a secret Santa is, but not a white elephant game.
Well, then you were engaged in a cultural mind expansion, right?
Yes.
But at least over in the UK, you've got a fighting chance to not be bombarded with the Clementine Caligula every blessed day. So, you've got a little bit up on us, Gene. But you also, you're a news ninja, and you keep up the news, so.
However, to be fair, the students that my wife is working with this year includes a Trump supporter.
Oh, dear. Into each life some rain must fall.
They're everywhere.
They're inescapable. By the way, just hillbilly superstition. I don't know if it's anybody else's superstition. Don't put those. You got rid of the one, but don't put the other calendar up before New Year's. Bad luck, man.
Oh, we're not going to.
Bad luck. Bad luck.
We're not going to.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah.
You've had a couple of runs of tough luck lately, and I just wanted to make sure that you didn't invite any more to yourself.
No, we're trying to be good. I'm surviving the best I can with my own personal things right now, just in case you're wondering. And I'm probably gonna let you be only because I have had a couple of runs of not sleeping, so I'm supposed to be asleep. But I just wanted to share that story with y'all, and say Happy Thanksgiving to your lovely wife, Agnes.
Well, I'm sure she's still listening, and she will be tickled pink to hear it because she thinks the world and all of you and Anne.
Thank you.
And
you enjoy your holiday.
Well, we're certainly gonna try. And happy holidays to you and Anne and everyone around you, Gene. You've been a part of this community for a very, very long time, and I sure am glad we are the better for it.
Thank you, Bob.
Take care.
Have a good night.
You too. Bye now.
Bye.
Takes a lot of determination to stick around and call all. Well, what is it? It's 8 minutes after one in the UK right now. By the way, Gene is one of the news ninjas. And he just made me aware of something. I don't know how this slipped past me. Maybe in the gunfire or something, but... Because we had another shooting here in our little town this week. A guy got shot in the arm and the face 4 times with an AK-47 in the tunnel that runs under US 60. There's not a lot good that goes on in that tunnel. Hey, meet me in the tunnel. We'll have ice cream. No, that doesn't happen. Lots of gossip flying around, but at the end of the day, it's what do we say around here? Wolverines! Been a while since we had a Wolverine, so. And, yeah, it's just another day of white-on-white crime in Appalachia. But I had no idea, and it's been going on since the 19th day of November. Here it is, the 22nd. It's half gone, and I haven't done a damn thing to celebrate it. Proclamation by Governor Jim Justice. Whereas the preamble to the Constitution of West Virginia declares, since through divine providence we enjoy the blessings of civil, political, and religious liberty, we, the people of West Virginia, reaffirm our faith in and constant reliance upon God. Whereas the Bill of Rights to the Constitution of West Virginia guarantees religious freedom, and the Sunday's accepted provision of Article 7, Chapter 14 historically recognized Sunday as a day of rest and worship, and this proclamation's two whereases out of the gate, and it's already fallen apart. Whereas, for many West Virginians, public school days once began with a daily Pledge of Allegiance, prayer, and Bible reading. Except after the goddamned atheists took our prayers away from us, and we can't pray no more because we ain't got no religious liberty here in West Virginia. Whereas, the state songs, the West Virginia Hills and West Virginia My Home Sweet Home, contain the lyrics, with their summits bathed in glory like our Prince Emmanuel's land, and there I work and play, and I worship Sunday. And whereas the influence of Christianity in West Virginia is evident by her many churches and Christian charities, ministries, missions, and schools, cherished Christmas, Easter, and Thanksgiving holiday seasons, and a willingness of mountaineers to love thy neighbor as thyself. Probably ought to leave that one out of there for a little bit. What with the incest story we just shared. Whereas Thanksgiving week is an appropriate time to center attention on our thanks to Almighty God for his great and good providence and for the Christian faith, which is part of West Virginia's and America's history. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Jim Justice, governor of the great state of West Virginia, do hereby proclaim November 19th through 25th, 2017 as Christian Heritage Week in the Mountain State, and invite all citizens to join in this observance. You know what I'd rather observe? I'd rather observe the First Amendment, which says that the government shall, you know, establish no religion. How's that? Could we do that? Well, not Jim Justice. Oh, hell no. By the way, a note from Brother Deacon Asa over to Gene. Big ups to News Ninja Gene, by the way. Come on now, Gene. Of course there are Trumpansies. You're in Brexit country. Kentry. Asa has learned to say it. Kentry. Yeah. All right, let's run over and check in back on the Skype line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Hey, pretty good, Billable Rick. What's happening?
Hey, I'm doing okay. So, say it ain't so, Joe. Did I hear something about Joe Biden doing something creepy? I missed that part of the first part of your show.
Oh, no. Joe Barton.
Go into that.
No, not Joe Biden. Joe Barton.
Oh, good. Okay. who is Joe Barton?
He's the longest-serving member of the Texas delegation in the Congress. Been around since 1985, and apparently at one point in time was sending naked selfies around and about with his telephone.
But you know what? If you're a Republican, it's okay. It's okay if you're a Republican, Bob, right?
I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. You've got it. By Jove, I think he's got it.
Yeah, but if you're Anthony Weiner, you sit in the tank, you know? Right?
Right.
It makes sense to me. Yeah, I mean, this is so weird, this whole, you know, situation with all these allegations coming out at once. It's like, it is almost like it's orchestrated. It's just too much too quickly. I'm sorry. You know, do you get that feeling as well, Bob?
Yeah, pretty much, kinda.
I mean, clearly when other women are coming out, that empowers other women who have, like, not, you know, who've held it in for so long to not, you know, to want to come forward as well. Maybe it increases their, you know, their likelihood of coming forward. But I don't know. Just, you know, I don't know. Just seems odd, you know. Is Barton on Trump's enemies list? Probably not.
No, but you never know who might have, because he only sent that to his one lady friend that he was in a consensual, mature, adult sexual relationship with in between his marriages. Along the way, it got out. It got loose.
Okay. So she was not a minor then?
No, she was a mature, adult lady. Consensual.
Okay. Well, sometimes some ladies, you know, depending on where you're from in the country, 12 years old is considered mature and adult. I don't know.
Apparently at the Gadsden Mall.
The minds of some of these skeevy guys, you know, these skeevy bastards, you know. Okay. Well, you know, I doubt we're going to have anything come out Well, I won't say I doubt. I mean, you never know what's going to happen, you know?
Well, you don't, but you have to. I mean, there's a different feud on. There's so many different shiny things to take the attention of good God-fearing, Bible-believing, upstanding evangelical, homosexual, fundamentalist Alabamians off the Senate race. I mean, Tangerine Tiberius has himself a Twitter war going on with LeVar Ball.
Yeah, right.
Whose name, interestingly enough, is spelled L-A-V-A-R, LaVar Ball, which is not LaVar Burton, L-E-V-A-R Burton.
Right.
Don't try telling that to the Trumpanzees.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Because poor LaVar Burton, who has worked so tirelessly over these many years to help little kids learn to read and gave us much joy as Geordi LaForge on Star Trek The Next Generation, and began his acting career as young Kunta Kinte in you know, the seminal, groundbreaking, history-making, first of all, miniseries Roots. Well,
let me ask you this. He was opposite Jim Justice in that, right? You know, he played the adult Kunta Kinte Jim did, right?
Jim Justice played Jim Justice because God said, Jim Justice, I made you Jim Justice and not Kunta Kinte for a reason. Don't confuse people, Rick.
I hear you. Where were you going before I so rudely interrupted you, Bob?
Well, I was just going to let you know that apparently, and why would they know? They're a bunch of skinheads and Klan sympathizers and neo-Nazis and Klansmen and whatnot. The maggots are not so entirely clear on the distinction between LaVar Burton and LaVar Ball.
Oh, okay.
So ever since Marcus Aurelius took to attacking LaVar Ball, the maggots have been attacking LaVar Burton.
You know, English is not their strongest suit. English or spelling is not their strongest suit, Bob.
Neither is thinking.
Yeah, right. Do they even have the sense that God gave an ass? That was an expression.
If their brains was gas, they wouldn't. If their brains was gas, Rick, they wouldn't have enough to fill up a piss ant's motorcycle and run it halfway around a BB. Okay.
Yeah, the good old maggots, I tell you. Oh,
so, man. I mean, here's a sampling. Since Kaiser Kumquat started his tweeting war with LaVar Ball, whose handle on Twitter, by the way, is LaVar Big Baller.
Yeah.
As compared to LaVar Burton's Twitter handle, which is LaVar Burton. Poor LaVar Burton has been inundated with the likes of at KGlass1957, very ungrateful, or Prose Man, you're a has-been actor with a thief for a son, and Trump is the president of the United States. Get the picture.
Or, well, you got the actor part right.
Or at JamieBoy05, I wonder what you did to piss off your producers that they made you sit through that shit show of an interview with at LeVar Burton. What an arrogant asshole. He directed that at CNN and Chris Cuomo because he'd seen an interview with LeVar Ball and thought it was, you know, LeVar Burton.
LeVar Burton.
At Lil underscore popsicle, washed up actor, check. Sun caught stealing in China, check. Trump still president, check. But none of that is true, huh? LOL.
Oh, God.
Here's the best, though. Here's the best.
Yeah.
From Stephen underscore L underscore Epps. At LeVar Burton, you sure don't do much for the black cause with your unlawful, ungrateful parenting skills.
The black cause. Oh, jeez. That's ridiculous.
It's funny, but it's painful at the same time.
Yeah, well, it's like these tweets acknowledge the guy is an actor, but what makes them think that, you know, LeVar Ball is an actor? You know, the guy is, I haven't seen him in any TV or movies. Have you, LeVar Ball?
No, I've just seen him on little clips in between college basketball games and stuff. And
in news stories.
He kind of makes Earl Woods look demure, you know.
Yeah, he does. He does. I mean, yeah, I miss Earl Woods from that standpoint. I mean, at least Earl Woods wouldn't, like, you know, he wouldn't, like, get in the face of everybody, you know. But, I mean, yeah, as far as the basketball players, they were felony stupid, Bob. They're lucky they're back in the U.S. And I think more than Trump really doing it, it's probably just more of a goodwill gesture by China to, you know, give these kids a break and get them out of the country.
Right, know? Because, you know, it's sort of, I mean, it presents a pretty bright contrast between, say, China, which let these guys go home, and North Korea, who pretty much tortured a young American who broke the law in North Korea to death.
Yeah.
But there's another comparison to be made. You remember when some American athletes, white athletes, were going ape shit in Brazil during the Rio Olympics?
Oh, God. Yeah.
Remember that?
Right, Lochte. Yeah, Ryan Lochte.
And they were just, you know, young men sowing their oats.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but according to the Marmalade Mugabe, these three basketball players were hardened criminals.
They're thugs, Bob. They're thugs, Bob. You know why? Because they're black, right? Right, I mean, it's obvious. I mean, if they were white, it would have been clearly because of some kind of a mental disease or illness.
It would have obviously been a big misunderstanding.
Oh, okay.
Because they knew that, you know, that white athletes, at least in the little tiny shreds of mind that the spirochetes have left to Donald Trump, white athletes would know better and certainly wouldn't have done it. And, you know, there are conflicting stories, and people need to listen to them also. You know, same shit he said about Roy Moore.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's also some good, you know, racist and class.
Right, some were charged with shoplifting, but some are also good people.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh man, we have disappeared so far down the rabbit hole. I think we're like, you know, we're halfway through the black hole already, Bob. We're being sucked into it, you know, involuntarily.
Well, look, I mean, and it's, I mean, I don't want to send you running for the benzodiazepine or anything, but.
Well, you know, it's always nice to have some of that on hand.
Two days ago, we crossed the 10-month mark of his presidency.
Right. Yeah, we did. Yeah.
10 months.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. 10 months, and I get calls. You know what? I was on air for the second Bush presidency.
Mm-hmm.
I was on air during the entirety of the Obama presidency.
Right.
I was on air during the war in Iraq. I've been on air, and we still got a war in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
I was on air during the Wall Street meltdown.
Right.
And I never got a call saying what you just said, Rick. I never got a call from anybody, and there's, God knows, hundreds, thousands of callers to this program over the course of 12 years.
Right.
I never caught a call from anybody saying, we've just disappeared down the rabbit hole. Never. Not once. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
10 months in to this presidency, I don't know. I don't know what number you would be of people who have called this program and said, we're done. I've sat here filibustering and said, we're circling the drain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, we are. I mean, while we're like, you know, dealing with this bullshit that, you know, Trump, these distractions he creates all the time, Trump is like appointing, you know, dozens and dozens of judges to the judiciary. He's dismantling the, the administrative state by having, his appointees roll back regulations or at least start the process. And speaking of China, they're in the middle of a major redevelopment, essentially, of the Silk Road. Have you heard of that? The Silk Road and Belt?
Oh, yeah. It's called the One Road Project?
Yeah, they're building, like, infrastructure all throughout, like, all throughout Asia.
And, you know, that's all just for people's well-being. I mean, none of that could ever possibly be used for military purposes or anything.
Or for resource extraction.
Or that, neither.
Right. Yeah, China just opened up its first foreign military base. I'm trying to remember where it's at. I think it's in, is it in Sri Lanka? I'm not sure. Maybe it's not Sri Lanka.
In the Indian Ocean area, yes.
Yeah, I think it's in that area, yeah. Yeah, so, you know, China clearly is benefiting from the incompetence of the... the Miralago Mussolini administration.
Yeah, and I'm told by Brother Deacon Asa I have to retire Marmalade Mugabe now that Mugabe is no longer dictator of Zimbabwe.
Wow, he lasted 37 years. Oh, speaking of Mugabe, Al Stewart made reference to that with regard to one of his songs. He said, this is strange because this song On the Border was about the situation in Rhodesia, like, you know, when he wrote it, like, what, 40 years ago or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Where they were killing, white farmers and so forth. And, he made reference to the fact, and it looks like Mugabe is, you know, under house arrest now as we speak.
Is On the Border about, well, maybe if he would, I always thought it was about the Spanish Civil War. The fishing boats go out across the evening water, smuggling guns and arms across the Spanish border.
Yeah.
The wind whips up the waves so high, so loud, the ghost moon sails among the clouds and turns the rifles into silver on the border. Yes,
well,
I'm pathetic. I know all the lyrics.
That's okay. I don't know them.
But, and this goes back sort of to the I don't recognize my country anymore aspect of it all.
Mm-hmm. Right, right, yeah, no.
There's a line in that song, and he's a brilliant lyricist.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
There's a lot of brilliant lyricists out there. I mean, God, one of the most brilliant love songs that I think has ever been written is Jason Isbell's If We Were Vampires. Something like a love song, and you think, well, that's been kind of worn out, and boom, there's that, and it's totally different. You've never heard the likes of it. There's an art to creating a great lyric, and Al Stewart has worked within the métier of history.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
And there's a line in On the Border where he says, "In the village where I grew up, nothing feels the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the patterns that remain." An empty shell. No one notices the customs slip away.
So
that feels like the whole freaking country right now, doesn't it?
Yeah, so I think he's talking about how fascism had taken hold in Spain, and it wasn't the same country that it had seemed to be previously, basically, right?
But there's also other references to just sort of feeling that things are a bubble off plumb, slightly out of kilter, out of mm-hmm. place, somewhat disjointed.
Yeah.
And they show up in a bunch of his mm-hmm. lyrics.
Yeah.
But that one always particularly grabbed me because it just sort of encapsulates.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I live in a small, very small town that has been home to my family for generations. I'm the only one who lives here now.
Right.
And as a consequence, you know, it's like I can drive into my small town and there used to be two grocery stores, a couple of banks, two movie theaters, and it was all during the boom phase of the boom and bust economy that is coal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all gone now. It's all gone.
Yeah.
There's one Rite Aid, two gas stations, a Dollar General, no movie house, two banks, and the high school where my parents went to high school sits up on a hill that overlooks the whole town, you know, the pride of the town. And mm-hmm. it looks like something out of a horror movie.
Wow. You mean the hill does?
Oh, the building does.
Oh, really?
Mm. Yeah.
The school?
Mm. Yeah.
Just run down.
Or
the Bates High School?
the Overlook High School.
Mm-hmm.
The rumor is that it's full of asbestos, so nobody can really do anything with it.
Oh God, okay.
But it's made of red brick and it's got a rusting metal roof. Mm. It had classrooms and a gymnasium and everything inside of it, and it just it just sits there as a sort of a ruin and a relic of a bygone time when this community was a going concern.
You know what that kind of reminds me of, Bob? I don't know if you've ever seen shows about like Chernobyl, like 25 years later. Like
oh yeah, like with the creepy amusement park and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Everything's like it's starting to like revert back to nature. You know, it's like everything's falling apart and the buildings are in disrepair and you know there's like now animals roaming through the city. You know, stuff like that. You know. It probably seems like that in terms of just the relic nature of the thing, you know. But yeah, we're headed down that direction as a population, in terms of you know we're going to be relegated to relic status here in another, you know, 50, 100 years or so if we can't, you know, get control. You know, if we can't learn to live in harmony with nature as opposed to always trying to conquer it. Guess what temperature it was today, Bob, here in L.A.?
Do tell.
It was 91 degrees at 11 a.m. on the west side of downtown, on, you know, 2 miles from the ocean.
That's the cool side, right?
Yeah, that's supposed to be the cool side. Actually, where I come from, I'm more in the hills. It was actually cooler in the hills. It was like 76 when I left home. But by the time I got to the office, it was like 91, which is just outrageous. It's almost Thanksgiving, for Christ's sake, you know? I remember in my boyhood, we, you know, living in the Midwest, we would have half the time we'd have snow on the ground for Thanksgiving. We'd have, like, you know, turkey bowls, we'd called it. Played, like, you know, tackle football or touch football, whatever we wanted to do, you know, in the yard, you know, in the snow. I don't think you do that anymore so much in the Midwest, you know?
No, I don't think it, no.
Yeah, I mean, I know they got some. They got some sleet the other last Sunday at the Northwestern game. I watched some of that. They shut out Minnesota. That's one of my alma maters. I went there a couple of years, so I have a certain fondness for Evanston and Northwestern and all. But I'm really a Hawkeye. But I still do root for them. And yeah, it was like coming down like crazy, about 37 degrees. But you know, it wasn't really sticking. But I mean, by and large. You know, our weather patterns are all askew. I went out in my backyard last night. I noticed the you know some plants that usually are dormant during the winter are now blooming, like the lilies.
Well, I mean, how long have just out of curiosity, how long have you been out there, Rick?
Oh gosh, 31 years or so, Bob.
So
30,
you've kind of got a handle on what this time of year feels like, or at least has felt like for the last 30 years.
Yeah, yeah, we've had maybe I don't know if we've even and so we this maybe is, had one night.
This is Abby. This is Abby normal.
Yeah, it's very Abby normal, exactly. Yeah. I mean, we've had maybe one or two nights so far where you'd even have to close the windows at night, you know, because it was too cold, you know. I just leave the windows open all the time. Unless it's too warm because I need the air conditioning on.
So, do you at least get tomorrow and Friday off?
I get tomorrow off. I'm going to take Friday off. I am scheduled to go see Jerry Lee Lewis on Friday night in a small theater in downtown L.A.
Jerry Lee's on the clock. Have you found your Ted Nugent or your Lee Greenwood tickets yet?
Not yet. I don't know if I can stomach that, Bob. That's the thing, you know?
Hey, are you a member of the team or not?
Do I need to take one for the team? Are you here? Are you serious?
Help their careers by buying a ticket for the damn show? Yeah, use your powers for good, Rick.
Yeah. Hey, last I checked, Al Stewart, he looked good on Saturday night. As far as I know, he's still doing fine, but he's not to the 9-day mark yet. You know?
Oh,
like
Jesus, you had to remind me.
Oh, jeez. But he looks good. He tells a lot of stories and just seems like a very nice guy. And I know you interviewed him on your show like some years back. I don't know when that was.
Lots of years back, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but let me just say this much, Bob. Look in your mailbox. Okay, in the next week or so, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
The real one or my email?
Well, your P.O. box in
okay.
that you share with the clan, okay?
Okay, I certainly will.
I addressed it to Bob Kincaid, care of the horn. So.
Okay, it'll get there. It'll get there. It all does.
Okay.
All right, yeah. Now you've got me eat up with curiosity.
Yeah, it's a surprise. I'm not going to tell you.
I will not try to torture you out of it. It's not like I'm going to play Pat Boone heavy metal or anything.
Yeah. So let me tell you a little about the show. How does that sound?
Oh yeah, I'd love to.
Want to hear about it?
Yeah. And we'll have a truncated Friday on the front porch on Friday, right?
Oh, should I save it for that?
Well, no, I mean, you can, no, I'm eager to hear now.
Okay. Well, I think I sent you the set list. Let me see if I can share it up here on my computer. I don't know if you have it handy. It's on a text. Let's see here. I think it started with Antarctica.
I should be able to scare it up pretty quick. Yeah, that was the one. I'm not familiar with that.
No? Okay. Huh. Yeah,
I'm not the fan I thought I was.
He played a song from his second album called Brooklyn as one of his encores.
Yeah, in Brooklyn. Yeah.
In Brooklyn. Yeah, here we go. Oh, scratch that. The first song was Sirens of Titan.
Yeah. That one I know.
The second one was, then it was Antarctica and Time Passages. And then the Year of the Cat album. And for the benefit of those who aren't aficionados. It starts with Lord Grenville, which is about a naval battle off of the Azores. And he basically said that basically the equivalent of a guy who would be like the punk rock star of the British Navy fought the entire Spanish fleet to like a standstill for like a day and a half before they caught him and killed him. So that's the first song on the album. Then it's On the Border. And then it is Midas Shadow, Sand in Your Shoes, If It Doesn't Come Naturally, Leave It, Flying Sorcery, Broadway Hotel, One Stage Before, and Year of the Cat. Okay, that was the regular playlist, and there were a couple of encores, but for the Year of the Cat, oh, man, that was a tremendous rendition.
And I noticed he had horn section and strings and everything, right?
Yeah. He had a band. There was a warm-up band called Empty Pockets, which, was surprisingly good. They basically backed him up, so they played, like, maybe for an hour to start with, And then Al took the stage. There
well,
was
he's
no
always,
break
he's always
bands.
Had a, he's always had a talent for surrounding himself with really good musicians. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The band is from Chicago, Empty Pockets, and then they had this older guy who played the sax and the flute and all sorts of different instruments, and he played a real killer saxophone solo during Year of the Cat, and he walked through the crowd, just to kind of give you an idea. You know, it's a square stage, sits in the back of the room, and then you have these basically these long tables, these long rectangular tables that basically span most of the distance across the room, and there's like maybe they have several, you know, columns of these tables. And then you turn your chair, of course, to watch him, to watch the stage. I was seated off to the, I guess it would have been my left, his right, as far as the stage, so I was kind of on the side, but it was still a really good seat. And so it seats about 500 people. And he's been there a number of times, he said. He loves the place. It's called the Coach House in San Juan Capistrano, and there have been all kinds of famous people that have been there. I mean, the walls are adorned with pictures of the stars with autographs, and, you know, they say, thanks, Gary, for, you know, for having me at the Coach House. He's the Gary is the owner of the place. He's been, like, the owner for more than 40 years, so... I mean, it's basically a who's who of rock and roll.
Oh, well.
And
by the way,
contemporary music.
You just got a note from Kim in New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
Subject line, Rick, help us out. Go to a Trump rally soon.
Well, I know he's going to Alabama to help out the Roy Tallamore.
Has he announced that? Roy Tallamore? Is he really going to go there and campaign for him?
He hasn't announced anything, but he's open to the idea, I believe. I believe that's what his press people are saying. So, you know, who knows? Who knows? So let me just complete. So he came out for a brief encore. The band left him, okay? It was just him and with his guitar on the stage. And then he sang Valentine Away. And then he sang In Brooklyn. Before he introduced the In Brooklyn song, he basically said that, okay, this is the way that I used to play. These are the songs that I used to play before Year of the Cat. So that made a big difference in his life, obviously, and launched him to, you know, international renown. But he's a very, he seems like a very happy guy, very well adjusted,
He survived. Didn't die in a bathtub or anything.
Right, right, yeah, right, exactly.
And
he didn't die at the age of, what, 27, like Morrison and Joplin?
And he's quite the...
Or he's 28.
He's quite the wine aficionado as well. I think those are called enophiles, O-E-N-O-P-H-I-L-E.
I think you're probably right, yeah. Yeah, instead, as opposed to winos, Bob?
Yes. All his wine has corks in it.
There you go. Oh, jeez. Hey, speaking of wine, I had a real good bottle of wine with my friend Star. We shared a bottle of Francis Ford Coppola from the, the Napa Valley, the pre-burn Napa Valley.
Now, you say that, I have to respond, the horror.
Right, exactly. Yeah, the fire as well. That fits it very well.
No, Francis Ford Coppola, Apocalypse Now, Colonel Kurtz. Horror. Yeah, okay. Sorry.
Oh, I did a whole book review on the Joseph Conrad short story. Was it called The Edge of Darkness? Or no, what was it called? Heart of Darkness. Heart of Darkness.
Yeah, Heart of Darkness. Brilliant book.
Yeah, I won a...
Kim just wrote me an email and said, where's my cowbell? Here's your cowbell, Kim.
There you go. That was a good one. Get Rick to a Trump rally. Well, if somebody can get me set up in Alabama, I'll go there and, you know, go
well,
to
the
one
problem,
of the
Well, the problem
there.
Is he's never going to go to California because California hates his guts.
Yeah, right. Yeah. He's never going to go to Chicago. tried that one time during the campaign. Remember that? He got shut down?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. He had to cancel it. I think that was at the University of Chicago, Illinois, or whatever, down the downtown campus there. But, yeah, no, he's never going to make it there. I forgot what my train of thought was there.
Bottle of Francis Ford Coppola.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I think I exhausted that avenue.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we're going to just be hanging out for Thanksgiving. I'm going to go down to her place and have dinner with her son, who happens to be the same age as my son, who's 22. And, you know, we'll just kind of hang out, and then we're going to go see the Jerry Lee Lewis show on Friday night.
Going to go see The Killer.
I will go see The Killer, hopefully just to watch The Killer as opposed to, you know, see him killed or whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
Just keep your powers in check.
Yeah,
Just save up, you know, don't let any leak out, slip away. Just keep them in check until you get those Ted Nugent tickets.
I think I'm okay, Bob, as long as they wear a full lead outfit to the show. That way, you know, the rays won't, you know, leak out.
Whatever you were wearing the night of the Petty concert, never wear it again. Burn those. Or at least, don't burn them. Just set them aside for the Trump rally or and the Ted Nugent concert and going to...
Kid Rock
or... You know, going to Mel Gibson movies, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh, jeez. There you go. So it sounds like you're ready for a happy Thanksgiving there, Bob, and your turkey hasn't started yet or not? Are you going to start
it's a,
in the
it,
morning?
They thaw at their own rate, you know? They just do.
Yeah. Yeah, right. You can't. Do you ever put them in, like, cold water in the sink to
what
get
do you
it
think
to
it's, what do you think it's? What do you think it's been in?
Oh, I thought you just left it out on the counter for the cats to get.
No, that's a little too cross-contaminatory for my taste.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
No,
it's
submerged in cold water, and it was submerged in water. The water got cold, and
mm-hmm.
As soon as the program's over, I will go and I will check and see if we're making any progress. Because again, I'm not going to do the whole thing with smoke.
Right.
I'm just going to let it sit in very, very low heat and smoke for a little bit.
Okay.
And then we're going to put it in the electric turkey roaster over at my daughter's.
Okay. Okay.
Now, mind you, this is not the $100 the $100 infrared turkey fryer that uses no oil. No, I will not do an oil-based, no, never will I fry a turkey, because I'll burn something down, probably me.
Just make sure insurance is paid up, your fire insurance.
This is like a giant, like a giant crock pot for a turkey.
Okay, gotcha, okay.
So we'll get to hickory smoke flavor, and,
mm-hmm.
You know, we'll put it in the roaster, and scatter some herbs and, you know, like a couple of potatoes and a couple of carrots, a couple of stalks of celery, just to add flavor to the broth for when we start doing the broth-requiring things.
Yeah.
And go from there.
Cool. You had a tremendous conversation about the holiday food porn with our buddy from New Jersey. I'm trying to remember his name.
Oh, Rich?
The other night.
Rich?
Rich, yeah, yeah. How could I forget that? That's my name, Bob. Except it's Rick.
Well, that's because you're not a self-centered egomaniac, Rick.
Okay.
Let's see. You got any football to watch this weekend?
I don't know, man. There's a lot of good games. I know you got the Auburn-Alabama game.
That's the game of the nation. That's everything right there.
Yeah, yeah. I know you're going to go for the Tide. But even if they lose and still win the SEC championship game, they'll be in the playoffs as a one-loss team.
Yeah. That is no reason for them to mail it in.
Auburn, if they beat Alabama, no, there isn't. I mean, Auburn, if they beat Alabama, they will probably be in the Final Four. Most likely.
Well, as a two-loss team,
They're number six right now.
And would Alabama necessarily go to the?
I think so. I think they've.
No. Alabama and Auburn would be. Alabama, Auburn would be a two-loss team, but one of the losses is out of conference, so they'd be a one-loss SEC team against it, and they'd win the head-to-head, so Alabama would not go to the championship game.
Oh, okay. Well, they could still go to the Final Four. They could be number three or four. Looks like Wisconsin's on the outside looking in as number five.
Yeah, that's the crime right there. They've just got to win. If they beat Ohio State in the Big Ten championship and don't make it into the Final Four, then the so-called playoff system is as stupid and rigged as the old mythical national championship system was.
It's rigged. It's rigged. It's a rigged system.
I'll tell you who I want out of there and has no business being in there is Clemson.
Clemson, yeah. They lost to who now?
Syracuse.
Oh, geez.
That has stunk up the joint for the rest of the season.
Wow. Well, Syracuse doesn't even have a winning record. They're like 4-6 or something, or what are they?
Yeah, they're terrible.
Wow. Well, my team, Iowa, has definitely plunged since they beat Ohio State. Couldn't even beat Purdue. That's ridiculous, you know? So...
And you know what? Oklahoma's getting a lot of love, but I don't. And Baker Mayfield. He's the inside track to the
Heisman. Yeah.
But you know I don't. Well, we well look. Here's the thing.
You think they're overrated?
Yeah. And, of course,
Oklahoma.
Saturday, they will come and visit, they will host my broke-down, beat-up, beloved Mountaineers.
Oh, my God. Have they fixed the quarterback's finger yet or not?
That was an ugly damn situation.
Oh, God.
I don't know how you could be ready. A week later, I mean, did you see?
Yeah.
Did you see? That's I call it Theismann finger.
I didn't pause the TV to like get a close up of it. You know, to get a freeze.
Oh, I just got a quick glance, glimpse.
It didn't look
and my
good.
Stomach
I
went.
Mean, I didn't get a
my stomach went kavoomp. Yeah. You know.
And the thing is, not only does the guy. Bust his finger, break his finger, not just break it, but mangle it. The ball hits the pylon, and it's a touchback, and ain't even a touchdown with that effort.
When the Mountaineers fall apart, we fall apart with real panache.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Now they beat Kansas 41-3 last week. Oklahoma did.
Oh man.
You know their one loss was to Iowa State. We beat Iowa State.
Right.
So
you guys beat Oklahoma, right?
So, you know, if there was any this would be the redemption of the season.
Mm-hmm.
We should have beaten Texas last week if Greer had been healthy hadn't gone out. We didn't.
Mm-hmm.
This is a chance to, you know, to sort of change destiny. Because if the Mountaineers could somehow manage to win in Norman, and, wow, what a somehow that would be.
Wow.
Then conceivably, Oklahoma's got to go, and at least there's a space there that Wisconsin could get into, and because Christ Almighty, they're an unbeaten team.
Yeah, I mean, they almost have to shut out Ohio State, like, you know, 42-0 to have much of a chance.
All they got to do is beat Ohio State.
Okay. Well, yeah. That's all they should have to do, you know?
And of course, you know, it'll be Clemson versus Miami in the ACC championship. So that'll either be that'll either turn into a one loss Miami team or a two loss Clemson team, and that would get Clemson out of the way. It would have to.
Yeah. Miami is looking. They're in the top four, I think, aren't they?
They're number two. They're number two.
Yeah. What about Georgia? Oh, sorry. I shouldn't make fun of Georgia with Steven from Georgistan. I feel.
Well, I mean, they're in the SEC championship.
Okay. So if they beat Bama, do they have a chance to get into the top four?
No.
Okay.
They're a two-loss team. You just can't make an argument for a two-loss team.
Well,
I mean, Auburn. No, if Auburn wins, they'll be a two-loss. So yeah, maybe Georgia. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, USC is on the outside looking in. They're like number nine, I think, or something like that. You know, Ohio State is. You know, there's a lot of good teams that have a couple losses. So we'll just have to see. But
there just needs to be a rule. If you finish the season, I mean, you're a lawyer. I mean, we like, you know.
Numbers.
We like bright line rules.
Yeah, right.
If you're an unbeaten team, you're in the playoffs.
Well, what about you? What about University of Central Florida? They're unbeaten at 10-0. They're number 14 in the country.
Well, I think an argument can be made that the four-team playoff needs to be expanded.
Mm-hmm.
Make it eight teams.
Even 10. You could have a play-in.
Make it 10 with ten with a play-in or 10 with two teams getting a bye?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or you can even make it 12.
But you're never going to have 12 unbeaten teams.
No, that's true. Yeah.
But you've got to have enough room that if somebody manages to go unbeaten, they are guaranteed to be in the mix.
Yeah, I think that's only fair. I remember the old days before the CBS and before the current playoff system. You know, there were a couple of years where Penn State finished undefeated and they did not win the mythical national championship those years.
Well, somewhere out there, there's some Notre Dame players walking around with Alabama's rings on their fingers. I remember the 1970s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Oh, speaking of the 1970s, too bad about David Cassidy. That was
and the thing is, he knew there was a time bomb ticking in his life because of his mom and his grandfather.
Yeah, he died of dementia, I think is what it was, but I'm sure.
Well, he had dementia. He had dementia, but he mm-hmm. died for want of a liver.
Oh, that's right.
Organ he died waiting for a liver.
Yeah.
Specifically a liver. Yeah.
Yeah. That's sad. He was quite a talented guy.
He was, indeed.
Looking back on it, he even had a show on Broadway, and he had the hottest show in Vegas, like in 1996. So,
well, all that taken together, we've managed to finish out the program. So you have yourself a good evening and a good holiday, and we'll be back on Friday, Bob. On the front porch.
Sounds great. You have fun with your family at Thanksgiving, okay?
All right. You take care, Rick.
All right.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Bye now.
And happy Thanksgiving to you all. I hope you enjoyed our... I planned this sort of as my little... You guys do so much to keep the horn on the air. I thought this would serve as a nice gift, if you will, from me to y'all. No mention of fundraising. I hate doing it anyway. And so we had a lovely little conversation. And don't think for a minute on the way out the door that I don't know what day it is. It's that anniversary. And yes, everyone of a certain age has at some point in time taken a moment and reflected today on what happened on this day 54 years ago in 1963. America changed. And I think it is safe to say we did not change for the better. But regardless, a very happy Thanksgiving to you all. A feast. Do it as you will and with whom you would. And please enjoy it with the best wishes of me and my little family here and all of us in the Horn Family Community Congregation. Thanks always go out to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you for jumping into the fray when he found out that I had snuck onto the air. Thank you, Sparky. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Gene. Happy Thanksgiving to you and Ann. Happy Thanksgiving, John Fox in Australia. Happy Thanksgiving, Ben Birch. And a big happy Thanksgiving to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.